Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
We're back, baby! Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a recycler, and I love films. As Gertrude Stein once said, one must dare to be happy. I loved Past Lives so much, I immediately saw it 2 more times, and it made me even more happy. Ah, Gertrude, me too. That's a lovely idea. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, Jamila Jamil, and even Kled Kudlambos. But this week, it's the brilliant actor, writer, podcaster, producer, stand-up, and star. It's the wonderful and only Tom Davis. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get all the extra stuff for the episodes. You get about 25 minutes extra chat with me and Tom. He tells an amazing secret. We talk about best beginnings and endings. You also get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Tom Davis. Tom Davis is an excellent actor, writer, creator, producer, director, all of it. He does all of it. I met Tom years and years and years ago when we first started stand-up together. He is now about to go on tour with his first big stand-up show. He's made King Gary. He's in Wonka. He's in everything. He's got an amazing podcast with Ramesh called Wolf and Owl. He's fucking brilliant. He's a lovely, lovely man. I was so happy to record this with him on Zoom, and I really think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. Welcome back, everyone. I very much hope you enjoy episode 274 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a creator, an actor, a writer, a producer, an improviser, a stand-upper, a wolf, a podcaster, a lover, a father, a husband, a hero, a legend, a grafter, a grifter, a great man, a wonder, and an angel, and also a boy. Please welcome to the show. I can't believe he's here. It's the one, it's the only. Here he is. It's Tom Davis.
Bless you. Yeah, I still find it really cringy when people introduce you to stand-up. Do you remember when you started stand-up and you used to get introduced, like that moment when you first ever got introduced to this sort of stage and you didn't know how to deal with it? Like, sort of the joke's almost easy, but actually how to sort of like walk out on stage and like be yourself. I found even now, when you do podcasts or you do any kind of interview, I always find it really weird that people have to pick you up, and I'm not used to it.
You feel sick.
I'm used to it.
Well, isn't that also just being English? I mean, it is like a sort of cliche, but it's true in that in America, when you do stand-up, they go, what are your credits? Before they bring you on, they go, what are your credits?
Oh, wow.
And you're like, what? And they sort of have to introduce you as like, he's done this, he's done that. You've seen him on Comedy Central. And people go, woo. But in England, you don't say anything. You don't even say, it's better if you say, this guy is a nobody and he's scum. And then the audience go, all right, well, listen. But if you go, he's amazing, people go, boo.
It's such a weird thing. Do you remember, like, there used to be a gig in North London run by Martin Besserman. I can't remember what it's called now. And I remember him introducing, it's probably about my eighth or whatever, 10th gig. And he introduced me by going, the next guy is probably the tallest person who's ever played this place. Actually, thinking about it, like Greg Davis or Steve Merchant have both played here and they're bigger than him. Actually, don't get excited because it isn't Greg Davis or Steve Merchant. Actually, I don't even know how funny this guy is. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah, to get him for Tom Davis. I was just like, everyone, in everyone's head, they're like, oh my God, Steve Merchant, Greg Davis, who are two of the fucking best guys are doing what we do in the business. And then you come out and it's sort of just an anti-climax for everyone in the room. And you're like, well, do you know what? Anything I say is going to be passable is fucking half decent now. It's like, they're not so expecting. Just, yeah, it's a real tragic way of being, I think.
When Derek first came out, I had a few times where people would go, he's the star of Derek. And so the audience are going, Ricky Gervais is here. And then they go, Brett Garson, you hear people go, hey. Oh, that one.
Which guy is he? Which is he? Is he in it? Yeah. Go through the IMDb.
Are you sure? I don't recognize him. Now, yeah. Tom Davis, I've known you for many, many years. We did stand-up together. I think this is the first time we met in Leicester doing that really dreadful gig.
Yeah, I mean, I remember doing, oh my God, yeah. We came out, we were sort of started out around the same sort of time, right? We'd have.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember the open mic together. That one in Leicester, I remember being awful.
Yeah, truly awful. Sort of one of those gigs where it's in a bar, but no one in the bar has asked for it or wants it, and they've made no concession to stopping the bar being a nightclub. I think there was still music playing. It's sort of like, yeah, just go and do just shout at these people.
Do some of your observations.
Just shout at these people trying to enjoy their evening.
It's an insane thing now to see then. Because I remember then we did a acting job together and we'd sort of, you know, we weren't in any of the same scenes. I think it's one of those things where you're coming up through the ranks with someone. And I think you were always someone I was always very like, I remember just the positive vibe that I was enjoying with you. And you were sort of, you felt like in the best way when I, like, not, it's the least competitive. You felt like you were always focused on where you were heading and you never felt like you could, like, felt like anyone else. That's a weird thing of stand-up. It's when I speak to youngsters and writers and actors, I think you can get consumed by what everyone else around you is doing. And I always felt with you, you were someone who always wished people well and you always felt happy for other people's success, which I was always, that was sort of, I think, I always took that as a real sort of show of your character, what a good person you are.
Well, that's nice. But I was like, I'm just like, it's not a sport. It's not like, it's like, it's art. It's not a competition. There's no... Because everyone's doing something different.
It's shocking how many people. It's shocking how many people in the industry still who think like that and work like that. And I think, and there's probably an element of that that's maybe needed. I don't know. It strikes me the people that I sort of like or consider as both on and off stage, the people I admire, are the people who've always taught us, looked at it as art or looked at it as something that's a team sport in a sense that, and also using the people around you to inspire you to go to the next stage or looking at people and go, oh, fucking hell, he's done that. That's amazing. That's reachable. That's something that I could potentially get or that could happen. And I think that's
Well, you're one of the, I'm going to say something sincere and forgive me. Fucking forgive me, Tom, but I'm about to be sincere for a minute and then I will not do this again. Is that you're now a national treasure and I'm fucking delighted for that. One of the reasons I like it, I like three things from people who become successful. Either they're really, really talented, or they're really, really lovely, or they work fucking hard. They've worked so hard. You can't begrudge them anything. You go, wow, you worked so hard for this. You are all three of those.
Oh, and that is
a rare and beautiful thing. God bless you.
Thank you.
Let's never be sincere again.
Well, thank you for having me on the podcast. This feels like the end of the podcast.
Anyway, well, take care. Good to see
you. Thank you, man. That means a lot. Bless you, man. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
But one thing I was thinking is, because you did, like, you're a fucking worker, man. Like, I forget, like, you did so many pilots and so many fucking, you did, like, comedy comedy blaps. Did you do a comedy blaps?
Blaps. I did a blap and I think I did a beep or whatever they called them on the BBC.
You did the warm-up guy? Yeah.
The warm-up guy, yeah.
I remember the warm-up guy.
Yeah.
The warm-up guy
was
great.
Yeah. It was, but, you know, it's that weird thing of, like, doing enough stuff. And even similar to you, like, you sort of, you do enough stuff that you learn on the job, right? Where you, I left school without any qualifications. I didn't really know how the industry works. So most of my stuff that I learned was through being on other people's sets and how scripts are written and, you know, and also a lot of failure, like a lot of things that didn't work. It's weird, but as soon as Merlin Successful came out, you're like, oh, right, this guy's not overnight success, gets on the wanky, but like, felt
because people hadn't seen all the other stuff. Who's this guy? And you're like, I've been drafted.
In the background. On sort of like little projects here and there. So it's a weird thing of like that becoming something that had, sort of launched you. But it's really weird now because as well, we live in such a weird time where no one's prepared to necessarily put those hours. Everyone wants their first sitcom to be them as a lead, or everyone wants to be front and centre. And, you know, you'd worked for a long time with different people. You learned the craft. And I think that's a really important education to have in our industry. I think that works alongside, you know, I remember when I saw Super Bob, it was such a brilliant piece of work, and it was sort of something that you experimented with, you'd gone out and grafted to find yourself, but you clearly worked on other stuff long enough to realise what the ABCs of what made things work. And I think that's really, people aren't necessarily ready to do that. When I speak to, like I say, I do work with charity work for people who come in and try to get into this industry, and everyone wants to go, oh, I want to buy a sitcom. And you're like, you know, I've worked with two or three people who've had those straight off the bat. And I don't necessarily think it's a healthy thing.
No, not at all. One thing I always want to ask you about, because I'm so fascinated, is like, from my small experience in the industry, it's sort of always been like, particularly when you're pitching something or trying to sell something or things that work on TV, if you can explain it in a simple line, you know, if you can boil it down to that, that's going to work. And I'm always like so amazed and impressed and sort of wonder how the fuck it happened that Murder and Successful not only got made, that it won awards, that it was successful, because it's fucking brilliant. It's amazing. And it's the most complicated, like, sell. Like, I'm like, it's hard to even describe to someone what it is. And the fact that you pulled that off and it's so great, I'm like, how did you pitch that? I just don't understand. It's so complicated.
It was one of those things, I think it got people's interest because it was so convoluted. And in the end, it was me, Avril, James and Andy, we got some, because it got turned down by everyone until the BBC picked it up. And the BBC were like intrigued by it. I think I'd done bits on the Morgana show and I was doing okay as a stand-up. So I think they were interested enough to go, what projects have you got? And that was the main one. And I'd sort of thrown everything into it. So I wasn't really ever getting offered leads. I was always getting offered, you know, big doofus in the background or sort of smelly best mate or builder. So I thought, this is the only thing. And
we need a smelly best mate. Is Tom available?
Yeah, cool. No, at the time, it was me, Nick Helm and John Wilkinson would often be sitting in a casting room. And more often than not, Nick Helm would get that part.
But, how smelly does he have to be?
Yeah. Nick was mid-smelly, Joe was least smelly, and then I was the real fucking
big smelly.
Good film, actually, Three Stinky Bears. BBC gave us money and we just shot some of it. And it was a great way of just saying, oh, is this going to work? And is it going to start? We did it like weirdly as well. We did a read through for it, which felt insane. Like doing a read through.
And you improvised around the table?
You know, the mad thing, right, is we had Mark Wright who did it and then later came on the show. We didn't improvise enough. It became a scripted read through. And it was, that was when ITV passed on it at that point. And then I think we shot like two or three scenes of it, and then we shot a pilot. And that's a really good thing. Right? I mean, you yourself, I think, again, when we shot like a taster, and that was like, oh, kind of that bit kind of works. And then when we shot the pilot, you're like, oh, actually, this works, but that doesn't. And it grew sort of organically and quite slowly. But yeah, still, like, I find it insane. I remember like when Will Arnett and Mark Formal came to speak to us, and hearing like them chatting on podcasts about it with Anna McKay, you're like, fucking hell, it's mad. Like, these are the people that I grew up, like Will Arnett, arguably is one of my favourite comedy actors. I think he's an incredible actor just in general. And for him to take that idea and run with it and do something with it is fucking, it's pretty fucking cool, right?
Amazing, isn't it?
I'll take that, yeah.
Now, last thing I want to know about is you're on tour now, right? You just started to tour. Is this your first tour?
Yeah, first tour.
Tell me everything. How is it? How are you doing? Are you enjoying it?
Where it's mad.
How long?
Mad everywhere, all over the UK. It's insane because it was like, Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing, like, yeah, to get deep. My daughter was born.
Get deep.
And deep. And then my God, like, so I at school, I was dyslexic. I had ADHD, which is what I understand. But, and I couldn't read and write until I was quite old. And my godmother was a teacher, and she sort of used to take extra classes and sort of pushed me into, I guess, being a bit more sort of deep thinking and educated than I would have been. And I think she was quite a sort of strong role model within my life. And she passed away just sort of in the back of when my daughter was born after about 6 months. And it was a weird thing. I mean, it's life, right? And it was a weird thing of like my daughter being born and her passing away. And I kind of was like, as it sounded, it would seem like a weird thing, never ever. Like I put off, I generally stand up became really quite toxic for my mental health. I found it really hard in the basis that I always wanted it to be perfect. And I was like, go out and sometimes I'd die. And sometimes, yeah, and that's just the nature of the beast. But I got into a really anxious place where I felt there's so much resting on every gig. I could be doing a gig, say for James Gill, who's, you know, one of our best friends and someone I adore. And I'd be like doing a gig for him in front of a really nice crowd and think, if this goes badly, I might never work again. It was an insane school of thought I got into. So I sort of then just was like, I can't do it anymore. And then when that happened, I was a bit like, you know what, actually, it's not that big. It's like everything else that was going on in my life. I felt actually just going out and James again was, and Flo and Ramesh were amazing to sort of give that confidence. And for quite a while, I was just literally going out for James doing all this big comedy. I was literally just going and he was, that was the only gig I'd always kept doing because I found James someone who always, you know, I mean, when I first started out, it was a very strange thing to sort of come out. You know, I was sort of coming up to 30. I was a scaffolder. I was sort of turning up at places. I wasn't necessarily the zeitgeist, the person that was around. I think that's one of the things I loved about you. I think some people judge were quite easy to sort of label, yeah. And I think I was never really that guy. James Gill, for example, was someone who always felt they gave me gigs and it was always very, you know, always honoured me to do more. From there, I just felt that support really to sort of go out and try it. And it's been the best thing I've ever done. I'm loving it. To be out, and you know, you're doing it yourself at the moment. To be out on stage and me and you have been very fortunate to have written stuff and, you know, people watch it through the television. That's amazing. But to actually be out there and hear people laughing and have that bond with an audience is pretty incredible, I think.
It's magic, isn't it? It is fucking magic. At the end of the day, it's actually fucking magic.
Well, it is, mate. It's like a wand you have. Well, it's just so easy with that. I don't want to give the end of your show away.
That's why people leave very quickly at the end. They leave very quickly and suddenly at the end.
Oh, God, I can't believe he's got that out.
I mean,
it's just strange. Yeah. It's such a... Yeah. Not even sort of joked about through the whole show and then just...
He didn't even sort of mention it. Just did it. And... yeah, I mean, some people enjoyed it, but other people thought there should have been some sort of
warning. I wouldn't rush to see him again, or I'd leave at the interval.
Wouldn't recommend, not for everyone, I'd certainly say not for everyone, but there will be a niche crowd for that. Is your show stories? Is it all sorts of stuff? Is there one big theme? Is it a thing? Or is it just all sorts of things?
Yeah, I think it's just stuff that I cobbled together that I found funny.
Good.
I just, okay, so you know what? What was lovely was the is that work in progress time, right? Is that you're going up there and you're throwing shit at the wall and sometimes sticks and sometimes doesn't. And weirdly, stuff that I thought was like, oh, this won't work. But then there was stuff that I'd spend weeks on trying to make work and never would. And yeah, man. And it's just, yeah, I think it's very indicative of who I am. I think it's, it feels like, this feels like, as a first tour of it, sort of. I feel very happy with it. It feels like it gets the different parts of my character, self-deprecating and silly, and it's not taking it too seriously.
Tom?
Yeah?
Fuck. I've forgotten to tell you something.
Go on.
Oh, God, it's so bad because I really feel like you're sort of like riding a wave, you know what I mean? Like, it's going good. I feel sick telling you this. I forgot to tell you it. I don't want to... I would hate to sort of be... sort of a negative. And maybe it isn't. Maybe it isn't. Depends on your point of view. But I should have said it earlier before we sort of got into all this. Tom, you've died. You're dead.
Oh, wow.
Dead.
So you're like my Clarence. That's my guardian angel.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm your Clarence. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Except there's no coming back. So this isn't even like...
Oh, okay. So shit. That was just all a big ruse.
So it's like... It's a Wonderful Life, but
Have a look. You have a look, but you ain't going back.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing I'm doing up there is I'm going to go and fucking see find that liar James Stewart. Give him a fucking slap.
how did you die?
I think I was shot, which was, yeah.
What happened, man?
Just a sort of case of misidentification. Sort of someone thought I was a gangbanger, but I actually wasn't. I was just walking down the street. So, it's that big guy who beat you up. And
they thought it was Stephen Merchant or Greg Davis.
Stephen Merchant beat him up weeks before. Yeah, no, that was him. Actually, he was heavier set than Steve Merchant. That was the guy, actually, now I think about it. But the guy from King Gary? Yeah, why are you American?
Shot, dead, one shot, pow.
Three shots. First of all, got my leg. Tried to, a bit like, you know, like Ricky in Boys and Hood.
Right.
When he's running down the alley. First of all, gets his leg, then he gets in the back twice. Yeah.
Cries in the back.
It felt so morbid. Even as just the film. I actually felt like I was talking about someone we both like Ricky, you know? From,
Ricky R.I.P.
Yeah.
it's kind of tragic.
Still want to, like, when I've watched that, I find that moment, you know, when he's walking down and he sort of, Cuba's just going to the shop and he does that, Ricky! I think it's one of my favourite, it's just like a good mention in Dispatches. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
Boys in the Hood.
Do you worry about death, Tom Davis?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Oh, yeah, go on.
I think having children, I think having children makes you really consider it more. I think, in the sense that...
Because you're like, get me out of here.
Yeah, actually, you know, as soon as you... I don't want her to see me. As soon as you sort of could start remembering me, I'd rather that, I was just the character that they could show on television. Like showing like little clips of Paddington 2 and go, oh, no, he was a good man.
Here he is with a bear. He's lovely. Look at him.
Yeah. There's a big statue of me in a cemetery. God, was he really that big? Yeah, no, he was. He was a big old boy.
He was.
No, it makes you think about it. I think you become more... And I'm naturally a hypochondriac. And being shot would be an easier way to get out of things than
not
a long fucking battle. This sort of horrible disease, you know. Because I know it sounds really bad. I'd find that really hard if, like, me and you... We were doing Always Be Comedy. I was really frail and you had to sort of help me up the stairs.
God, do you know what? Why don't we make this pact? If it ever gets to that, I'll shoot you in the leg and twice in the back.
Yeah. That would be such a good killing.
Just going to the police. Yeah, I did it. He was frail and I had to help him up the stairs. No.
And you know what? Go back 10 years. Listen to the podcast we did together. It's like an Osborne mission that, he says on that podcast. Oh, fair enough. Cool. Yeah.
10 years ago. That's what you're giving yourself. Listen to the podcast was 10 years ago. He got suddenly very frail. It was genuinely fucking tragic.
But stick man.
What do you think happens when you die?
You know what? I always think, I'm not a big believer in God and the afterlife in a sense, but then also I think of it a bit like, you know, like when you're looking forward to holiday all year round, right? It's shit to think of a shit holiday that's, you know, actually sort of, we're not going away this year, we're staying at home, we're going to have 2 weeks off and just stay in the house and just lurk about the house. I think it's much better if you've got something to look forward to. Like, oh, fucking hell, we're all going to Marbella. And I think that's what the afterlife should be. If it doesn't exist, you've lost nothing. No one's going to think you're a prick because they don't know either.
Yeah.
But the idea of actually going, essentially, death is Las Vegas, I think is a better thing to be looking forward to. Yeah.
Saying if there is an afterlife, it's like going to Marbella. And if there isn't, it's like lurking around your house for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's essentially what you're doing. It's lurking around a hole in the ground, isn't you?
Yeah. God.
Unless you're a ghost.
Yeah.
I think being a ghost is almost the worst one.
I think so too. That's interesting. Go on.
I just don't think this. I think, you know, when people talk about ghosts and they're going, oh, you know, it's a cold, miserable sort of ghost. I'm like, of course they're fucking miserable. They've got no interaction apart from other pricks who've died. Essentially, that is like, you know what? Being dead and being a ghost, right? So being dead and going to heaven is like going to Marbella, right? Yeah. Being dead and just leaving lying in the ground is like, that's basically just fucking staying
Christmas,
at home.
Christmas without going away,
Being dead and being a ghost is like, remember like, on New Year's Eve and you wanted to go into like the Sky Lounge in Leicester Square or something, but you couldn't get in because you were in a group of fucking four other mates, all sad losers like you were. So it was like, sorry, no blokes on their own. So you just had to lurk around Leicester Square, just fucking like looking for a bar that might take you in. That's fucking being a ghost for the rest of your life.
Just queuing outside all bar one at 2 in the morning on New Year's Day.
Not knowing where you're going to go until you find a clip joint that takes fucking all your money. It's like, essentially, that's being the fucking ghost. It's constantly just looking at the party and never being able to dance.
Christ.
It's...
Yeah. God, you really need to take care of all your business before I shoot you in the leg and twice in the back, because I don't want that for you. I want you going to my mayor, I really do.
Yeah. Just sudden it up. Well, Brett Goldstein's coming up here. I'll be for the gates. Yeah, we're right, good laugh up here, mate.
They got Lineker's, they got everything.
Even though Wayne Lineker's seen us both out, he's still alive.
Okay, well, good news. There is a heaven, and it's just like Marbella, in all the good ways. And let's face it, there aren't any bad ones, but it's filled with your favourite things. What's your favourite thing?
What, my favourite thing in the world? Yeah. My daughter would probably be my favourite thing, but I'd say that, I'd want her to have a bit more of an innings than me, so I'd probably go with, food would probably be my favourite thing.
All right, well, there's food fucking everywhere.
Yeah, it's just ladles of food.
It's like a sort of, you know, a food court in a mall. But like,
that would be my heaven.
It's fucking everywhere. The seats are like giant tacos. Like, everything is made of food. It's food.
Just taking you around heaven on your first day, mate. They've got everything here. They've got a Wendy's, they've got a KFC, they've got McDonald's, mate. They've got Toby Carvery. They've got everything here, mate. Nando's. Three Nando's here, mate.
Honestly, look at that plate. See how big that plate is? You can put anything you want on that. You want.
That's one of the small plates, Brett, mate.
And I've caught up with you 10 years out. I'm like, is this all you've been doing? You're like, I've come here. It's fucking brilliant.
I've not even been out of this bit. I know there's other stuff going on, other people's heavens. This is just my...
All right. Well, yes, there's food everywhere. There's also some people there, some like walking hot dogs, all sorts of stuff.
So it's like that Seth Rogen movie.
Sausage Party.
Yeah, Sausage Party.
Everyone's well excited to see you. They want to talk to you about your life, but they want to talk to you about your life through film. The first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Tom Davies?
You know, the first film, Mr. Sausage Person, that I remember seeing, there's a Swiss Family Robinson movie, right?
Yes.
Which was made in about, I think it's about 60. It's one of those old 60s movies.
Disney.
Yeah, it's like a kind of Disney. It's quite old. It's like a bit, I remember basically, near to our house growing up, there was a video shop called Joyce's Video Shop. It was like sort of almost pre-Blockbuster, and she had about 10 videos in. So there was that one called The Cross and the Switchblade, which is about a guy called Nicky Cruz, who's like a street thug who played a priest. And I just remember there's a bit in it, and it was, God loves you, Nicky Cruz. But my mum said it was too violent to watch. So we used to take Swiss Family Robinson, and it was quite a sort of, they all got shipwrecked, ended up on this little island and as a family, and it sort of, but then they had this big fight with some pirates at the end, and I haven't seen it for years. So I sort of, it's actually really, from what I remember, you know, from if I go back and sort of almost get back into my sort of 7-year-old head or whatever, it's a 10-year-old head, I don't know what it'd be. That's the first film, But then it's weird, isn't it? Because you get flashes of like Guns of Navarone or whatever. Yeah.
Have you got siblings?
I've got a sister, Yeah.
Did you watch this together? Is she older or younger?
Yeah, we'd watch it as a family on a Saturday night. We'd usually sort of sit down and have a bit of tea. And it was, and like I say, she didn't have many films, did old Joyce? It was one of those shops that sold wool and rented out videos. She had like 10 videos, right? And you'd go in and go, my dad would go, oh, wait, what's this one like? And she'd go, I haven't seen that one. And there's 10 fucking films here. Right, you've got 10 things to watch. Give a fucking review. Do you know what I mean? She had the same 10 films up until
Joyce
I was about 16.
Like, I'm busy making wool. I ain't got time for all these.
I'm busy fucking shaving these sheep. I haven't got time to watch films.
These sheep aren't going to shave themselves, mate. Right, do you want wool or a video? What are you in for?
Well, I've got both, thanks, Joyce. I'm submitting. Watch The Cross and the Switchblade. But it's also, it's that throwback of, I used to love that sort of, still do, really. If I'm sitting on a Sunday, one of that sort of old school sort of films, everything's really bright. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, so bright.
And there's no sort of blood in it, and it just feels very wholesome.
And all made in a studio, clearly all made in a studio, like, fake.
I do remember there was this incredible water slide that was a bit like the one in The Goonies, in it. Yeah, that they essentially, remember like in The Prince of Thieves, where he turns that wood into this amazing base. They sort of did a shittier version on this island there, right? Which, I sort of thought, I'd love to go there on holiday.
I love that.
We used to go to the sort of water palace in Purley and pretend it was Swiss Family Robinson.
What was that called? Fantasies?
I think it got turned into a nightclub, but it was called, yeah, it's the one that everyone used to go to and say that there was razor blades in the water.
Razor blades,
yeah. God, don't go down there, don't go down the big time, mate. It's razor blades in there, I'll cut you open.
Weird that when you think about it, the weird that they were open with all these razor blades.
The same thing that you'd be able to go, you got your razor blades, yeah, go down, I'll see if you could stop yourself and push it in.
And also, that if it was true, that there would just be hundreds of children just sliced in half, bleeding in the pool. The pools would just be red. There'd just be half kids everywhere. You'd have noticed. You know what I mean? But it's really scary. I remember being scared.
The awful thing, just leaving like a water palace, just like cut to ribbons. See you next week. Yeah, hopefully it's a little bit easier next week.
Sorry, I don't want to complain. Far be it for me to complain, but I think, could someone see about taking them razor blades that are in all the slides out? No, none of my business. Anyway, see you next week.
Yeah, or just having one of the slides that has razor blades and sort of letting everyone know which one it is. Because I mean, I don't want to ruin everyone else's fun. Just in case there are people who are into that.
You'd want it in the black hole, the dark one. So when you come out, that was terrifying. You don't know what's happened. Then you come out and everyone's cut to ribbon. Yeah. That is quite
good. I remember trying to show off to a girl by going down there and absolutely shitting myself all the way down. Absolutely terrified. Coming out of the bottom of it.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
I was so fucking crying. Where are your trunks? Two of the bigger boys took them off me at the top. So that went faster if I went naked.
They were right as well. It went well faster.
Yeah, I flew down there.
What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared, Tom Davis?
I can't watch horror films. I get terrified. Oh, really? This is a weird one, actually, because... So I remember going to a girl's food podcasting, learned not to say people's names because you'll be careful of that. Yeah, so I went to a girl I had a massive crush on when I was about 13, I reckon, 12 or 13. I went to her house to watch some films. So we watched The Exorcist. And I remember sort of sitting there and she was really into it. She'd sort of stolen it from my mum and dad and we sort of sat in the bedroom watching. I watched the whole thing with my eyes closed. She took turned off all the lights and she was like, oh my God. And I was like, oh, it's so scary. Like, sitting there with my eyes closed, just thinking, oh God, this is fucked. And you know what? Weirdly, that film's scarier if you just listen to it. If you watch
it, I can believe that.
Yeah. It's quite a scary listen. So I've never even watched it myself all the way through. It was an insane thing as well. It's actually just, this is my, like years later at Blackpool, right? They've got this weird haunted house. I don't know if you've ever been to it. And it's full of like people doing like Freddy Krueger. There's a Freddy Krueger.
Oh, right. Yeah. I've done something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you walk through this, it's like an immersive experience.
And people, actors jump out at you.
Yeah. And there was like I remember that in there was a girl, like the girl from The Exorcist, sitting in a bed. And you go in and she's sitting there and then she just leaps up and it's like crazy. But there was a guy who jumped out of you, like Freddy Krueger. And I always remember we were going around, it was sort of like me and my missus, and there was this sort of like bloke, quite a sort of big, like northern fella with his two young daughters. And as we're walking around, he's sort of, they're terrified, these two. They're too young to go into this. Yeah. He shouldn't have brought them. It was his bad. And he's like, all right, we'll be out of here in a minute. And as we came into his room, this guy leapt out behind him dressed as Freddy Krueger and went, rah! He just turned around and fucking whacked him.
No.
In defense of his daughters. And then the guy playing Freddy Krueger went, oh, for fuck's sake, Jenny. 2 years at Rather for this. And he realized the whole thing was just ruined for everyone. But he was a trained actor. And you think, oh, bless him. No. Like, you know, that was his moment to scare everyone. And this Norman bro, so I'm fucking sorry that I shouldn't have brought these two. I'm fucking bloody punch people in the face. It was a beautiful moment, when worlds collide.
Oh, God. So tragic.
Heartbreaking.
You know, May Martin, we went to Universal Haunted Halloween Nights of Terror.
I bet that's a big one.
It's fucking great. And they have like haunted mazes where it's like that, where you walk through and things jump out of you, people jump out of you. And there is footage, me and May, we were with a group of people and they went, you go in front. And so we're walking through this maze, it's really loud and then things pop out of the wall and jump out of you. And there's one bit of me and Mavis were walking through a corridor and a thing jumped out the side of the wall. And I, like May was a bomb, I picked May up and threw them into a wall and like jumped on top of them. And I went, Mavis! like I would protect them by throwing them into a wall.
So Oh, I've got you. You're a...
I've got you smashed into the wall. Mavis!
You know, blood coming through your head. Quick, go down this slide.
Anyway, so you don't, that's interesting. What about crying? What's the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
Yeah, I am, yeah. You know, recently, the one that really got to me was A Star Is Born.
Oh, yeah. It's a great film.
I loved it.
I think it's a really great film.
I went with my wife. So my wife had we love films. So it's a big part of our relationship, like films. And right. You know, we'll try now with Grace's here. We try to once a week watch a movie together, like whether it's, you know, something new or not, whatever. And so she'd been though. You remember Star Is Born was a bit like Barbie. There was big groups of women going. It was like she went with mates and a sort of like a Hindu vibe, which sort of pretty ruined it for everyone else. Anyway. We
woo! He's pissing himself. Woo!
Tom does that.
Relatable.
So I was worrying about me that I am Bradley Cooper's character. But then we went to watch it anyway. She just before the bit when Bradley Cooper sort of, I mean, we'll have spoilers on it. I mean, it feels
we can say spoiler. Skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want.
Yeah, when Bradley Cooper sort of commit suicide. She got up and she got out because she knew it was quite a sad thing coming. So she left me standing there. I wasn't standing. I was sitting there. I wasn't standing. So I'm just standing. Like, shut out, mate. Fuck off. I'm enjoying this. Like I'm at a football game.
Can we all be upstanding? This is very good.
Like you're watching West Ham. Mate, we're attacking at the moment. Chill out. We should all stand. I should have stand in cinemas.
Stand up. If you like Star Is Born, stand up.
Yeah, I'm like sitting there and next to me is another guy and then his wife is next to him. So this guy's sitting next to me and when that thing happens with Bradley Cooper, I just went, oh, fucking hell. And I had tears. I was like, really, it hit me. And the guy next to me, I looked around and he was equally as sad. And then he just, I'd never met this man before and he just gently put his hand on my arm and just went, fucking hell, mate. And I was like, like that. I'd never, it was a really beautiful moment between the two of us. And then Catherine came back, hold it, like, touch that guy. And I was like, number one, why did you leave? Just as you know, Bradley Cooper's going to fucking die. She was sad. It would, you know, I wanted to get back. It's, you know, the rest of the film's not going to be a fucking walk in a. It's not the end of Wizard of Oz now, is it? It's fucking dealing with the ramifications of what's happened. Like, like fucking Lady Gaga's in bits now.
You're like, you left me and I've moved on. I've moved on to a sensitive man.
What's your name, mate?
Look after me.
But I saw his wife looking like quite disturbed. But yeah, I found that really, and it stayed with me for like a week or so after. I think it was like, you know, I thought it was actually brilliantly done that, actually. I thought within the film, it was a really amazing, it's a very important subject matter, obviously, one that we're all talking about a lot more now. But I found it it was one of those moments that I think that's, you know, when something you see something quite amazing when it stays with you, you think about it every day in your quiet moments. You're like, fucking hell. And I think sometimes when, you know, mental health wise, when you can get to a low place, it's actually quite an important piece of work where you actually realize actually the ramifications of an act. Like, and I've, you know, friends have sadly done that. So I think you find that thing of just being like, okay, fucking, you know, it's, And I thought actually, as that was one that really got me. Yeah.
Good answer. I love your new husband. Fucking hell, boy. I love that.
How did you both meet? I don't remember Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper kills himself. We were both...
No spoilers.
Yeah, but by the end, we were just French kissing.
What is the film that is not critically acclaimed? Most people don't like it, but you love it unconditionally. I think everyone else...
Do you mean that. Like... Because I have a real passion for shit films.
Yeah.
So one of mine is Samurai Cop, and have you ever seen it?
I just love the title. Tell me everything.
It's probably one of the worst. Like, it's me and my wife have watched it hundreds of times. It's really, it's like you only get it on DVD, and it's just it's been made by, you know, like we have these guys now over in this country make these films and sort of like, you know, yeah, I'm making a film, I'm in it, I'm fucking directing it, and I'm fucking producing it, I've put all the money up. Sort of one of those. And it's kind of trying to be, I guess, like there's an element of sort of Lethal Weapon and an element of, I want to send you a copy because I do genuinely think you'd enjoy it, element of Rambo, you know, that sort of 80s vibe. but it's really bad. Like there's bits in it they've shot like the same scene and they've shot it on 5 or 6 different days. So people's singles are in different, like it's like genius, like as a comedian sitting watching it, because you're like, fucking hell, like they're clearly in a Chinese restaurant and they're in a sort of downtown cafe somewhere in LA. And it's just, and the guy's hair changes throughout the movie. He's had his hair shaved off, so he has to wear this weird wig. And the fight scene, there's one bit where they're in a helicopter and it's like, you can't jump from here and you can clearly see that they're on the ground. It's just, yeah, it's brilliantly awful. But it's,
that's great.
And I just find stuff like, I genuinely find that stuff like that. Just, I love watching stuff that's just a bit shit. La Roma, like, yeah, for example, or whatever. But stuff that's just, because there's a part of me that thinks, you know, when we started out and you would go and you do a gig, there was a guy, I don't know, I can say his name, you bleep it out, but I don't know if you remember.
I forgot about. We must cut his name up, but bleep.
Yeah. He'd be like an open mic guy back like 10 years before me and you even started, right? Yeah. And I remember thinking, I remember chatting to him, and I remember I probably had my first paid spot somewhere. And I remember, like, I've got a paid spot this weekend, and him being like, oh, yeah, I've never been paid for a gig. And I was like, well, you've been going for, like, you know, 13, 14 years. Like, and he was like, I just enjoy it. I just think it's kind of cool to go out. And that's what I get from it. And I was like, fuck, actually, maybe he's got it right. Like, he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah,
like,
you're just, so right. Yeah. He was on no mission. He just enjoyed it. And he was lovely.
Going out doing open mics. And there was no, like, you know, me and you, it became a career. And probably, you know, we were similar at the time. And we're like, oh, fuck, this is... But with him, I was like, oh, shit, man. Like, and when I watch films like that, I'm like, it feels a bit like, actually... You know, kind of guys that sort of get down the gym or whatever, or they're making something that actually they're actually really enjoying the process. There's a British sort of version called Gatwick Gangsters, which is again, it's just like a group of people have made a film.
Yeah.
Didn't
they have Harvey Keitel in it, Gatwick Gangsters? Didn't they get Harvey Keitel?
He'd written it. He'd done a day part of it. What the fuck? What is this? Yeah, I love those. I think there's no end game. They're not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, me and you are writing. You know, we're very fortunate in what we do. You're writing it to hopefully do make something that people can enjoy, sit and watch. The idea of just sitting there and making something that no one's ever going to see or no one's ever going to watch, apart from you and the people in it, I think it's kind of sort of uplifting. I think it's just like, it's a bit of a hobby.
I saw a film. I don't know if I've talked about this on a podcast before. I'll try and leave out details, right? But I would never do it again because I didn't enjoy it at all. I was asked to be like on a panel for like an awards thing for film. And it was like picking the nominees for a certain kind of film. And I watched so many films and they were all really boring, very serious, very depressing, kind of dull, hard work films that, like, you know, feel like vegetables. We're like, I'm sure this is good for you, but fuck me, it's boring. And within the mix of these films was this terrible, as in kind of objectively terrible film that a guy had made on his own that was kind of like a sci-fi thriller, but like badly shot, badly acted. There's like clearly a scene where he's hired a sex worker to strip on the film, and there's like all sorts of, it's like mad, but it was so entertaining. And so I was watching it and I was like, this hour and a half has flown by, regardless, compared to all these films that I've watched that have been so boring and hard work. This film that, yes, kind of technically quite bad. I was like, maybe this is amazing, because I'm not even like laughing. I'm not like going, you fucking idiot. I'm like, I'm really entertained.
Yeah.
Like, this is great. This is fun. This is like, something's happening here that is really entertaining. And I'm like,
which is the best film. It's like escapism, isn't it? For a bit, it's just like, oh, fuck it. Like, I'm not having to think about wider problems. And like, yeah, so Samurai Cop is, I think, it's just perfectly awful. It's really worth, if you can get a copy of it. I've got two copies of it just in case one falls.
Oh, thanks, man.
So, yeah.
What a great answer. All right, on the other hand, what's a film that you used to love? You loved it so much, you've watched it recently and it does not hold up.
Incredible Journey.
Oh, no. The original or the new one?
The original. Look, so that was a film, you know, like you'd have a sick day from school. You'd stay off, you'd have a bit of a tummy ache. Your mum would sort of do her best to look after you, you know, between, you know.
Can I just check? This is the third film from Joyce's 10. It's the Cross and the Sword. Swiss Family Robinson.
No. Switchblade and the Cross. Yeah. Swiss Family Robinson and the Incredible Journey.
Right.
If you had a day off, yeah, you had a dicky tummy or you're a bit sick, your mum would go, oh, well, I can't get the Incredible. And the Incredible Journey was the thing you'd see. And I have these memories of it being like this amazing film that's sort of uplifting. Mm. And Incredible, it's about friendship. It's, you know, and then I sort of sat because Grace loves dogs. I thought, you know what, I'd have a little blast from the past, stick this on. I got off and threw it. She wasn't interested. She walked off. And I was like, this is awful. I don't know. It just is not as... It's actually, number one, it's a really boring journey when you sit back and watch, go back and watch it, right?
The boring journey.
Just get a cab. the guy's voice commentating on it. And here they go. The cat is trying to catch. Narrating
the river,
it.
They're at a river now.
Yeah.
Good luck to him.
With the cat, you know. And do you know what? When I sit and watch it,
Hang on, for those who've never seen it, it's about a dog, two dogs and a cat trying to cross America to find their owners.
There's a thirsty, eager dog. There's a cat. Yeah. When you watch it, it's actually really... The lead dog clearly is very happy he's got a part in the film. The cat can't be fucking arsed. He can see that the owners are up for it more than he is. And the old one can't be bothered. It's like, you know, like when you watch the last days of a great performer's fucking career, like an old footballer who's just got, you know, he's just phoning it in a little. That's what the dog feels like. I'd like to actually look at the dog's IMDb and see if he's been in anything else. Like on set, just turning around and going, well, obviously Gulliver's Travels is a part there.
It's just... The Incredible Journey was a nightmare.
Catering was awful.
We were cold.
One of those silver jackets on for most of the shoot.
So why is it? It's boring. That's the problem.
It's boring. I don't know. And also, I think I remembered it with such gusto. Yeah. I remembered it like in such an affectionate way. And it wasn't really until Grace was born where I was like, oh, I'll stick this on. And like, I think, you know, I sat down to watch it just thinking this will be a moment of father and daughter, you know. This is one of my happiest memories of it. Wish I'd stuck on the cross and the switchblade, which was, she might have taken something away from it. Like, street crime is bad. Arguably, God is good. But but instead, we sat, like I say, it's, I think she, it won't be so good. It won't be her poorly tummy film, finding stretch of imagination.
Shame. Well, what is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily as the film itself is good, but the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you, Tom Davis. What is it?
Well, I think Brett Goldstein would be great. Is it Bad Grandpa, the film with the Jackass film?
With,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Knoxville. Me and Catherine went to watch that really early on in our relationship. Yeah. And have you ever seen it? It's actually
I've seen some of it. I haven't seen nothing.
So we still remember it. We've probably watched it three times, but it's one of those things. Wherever it will pop up on Amazon Prime or whatever or Netflix, we'll really chuckle because it was one of the first films that we went to as a couple to the cinema and really bonded over the I think we shared the same sense of humor. It was one of those things as well that I think as a big fan of film. No, I say it was one of those things. Not really drinking now, it's like, you know, what you're going to do socially, sort of, and film, going to the cinema is a big part of sort of, our social lives and what we do as a couple. But I remember going to see that, and actually that felt one of the first things that we saw that actually we both laughed loads at, and we both felt like it was, Jack. And we went back and watched all the Jackass films. It's a really. I think it's really, really well done. I think Johnny Knoxville is amazing. I think the little boy, that's incredible. And it's sort of, I think, a really underrated thing within our industry of the actual, the ability, and other people have tried, but to sort of write a sort of narrative arc for a film and actually have sort of empathy towards a character that you're shooting in front of real people. Like, as someone that, we murdered successful and stuff, that, like, for a long time, I was like, to really try and, like, when Murder and Successful first started and we were starting talking about what would be a film that we'd want to make, I was always like, that there, I felt like, fucking hell, that must have been so, like, knowing how it worked with Murder and that improvisational nature, watching that, I was like, with that kid who was incredible, the shock moments, and it all, I think I probably, in a way, enjoyed it more than something, maybe even Borat, I think, just because I felt the actual feeling that you got through it, it felt like actually it was touchable, and actually the storyline was him having to spend time with his grandson and his daughter, and I don't know, I thought it was a really nice movie and just brilliant. The set pieces, those again, like, you know, I'm a comedy guy. I love comedy. It's my, I adore it. And when I'll sit and watch something that can make a fucking packed cinema piss their pants laughing, and it could be as pure as, you know, shitting yourself for a big fart that just turns into a guy shitting himself up a wall. I think it's a really special thing. And I think that's, it's something that I remember really, really affectionately. Like there's other films, The Star Is Born or whatever else that have come along over the last 10 years that we sit and you know, have watched over and over again. But that one, I always think, yeah, that sort of cemented that sort of sense of humour that we still find funny in between it.
It's lovely. It's lovely, Tom.
Don't cry, mate.
What is the film you most relate to?
There's a couple. I think, have you ever seen Fist Foot Way with Danny McBride? Jody Hill.
Yeah, his first thing.
Yeah, that when it came out, weirdly, as the lead character, Danny McBride is someone I look at as being, that's my Shakespeare in a lot of senses. Yeah. That's the guy that I look at when I first saw that movie, I was like, it's a really weird thing that I saw that just as I was making things like Warm Up Guy and I was first writing, I was first coming out of stand-up to write sort of, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was like, wow, fuck, like this guy's doing stuff that feels like the characters that I find really, really funny, a world that, and he's never, and it's funny was always first with him, and you know, going on to Eastbound and Down, and Vice Principals is a work of absolute genius. Righteous Gemstones, I think, but that film, when I first saw it, and I then heard the story behind it, like, and you know, much like your relationship when you made Superbob, but like mine and James's relationship, James DeFond's relationship, I was always like, fuck, that felt like really like, the way that you guys have put this together as a director and a star and two writers felt like attainable for where I'm at in this industry and what I want to do. But also making a character that was arguably quite unlikable, but very, very lovable. You're like, this guy's, and I just think he, in how he makes stuff and how they make stuff, really like, they have such great identity with the working classes, whether that's in America or England. It just feels like they just get that nuance, just perfect. So that film, when I saw it, I was like, look, I love comedy movies. That's the film where I watched. So I was like, both as a creator, but also something about the guy in the middle of it, you know, he's the main character in it. I was like, there's a lot of stuff that I can identify with as a character, a sort of guy struggling in his relationship at the time or struggling to be taken seriously.
Did you say he's unlikable but very lovable?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, that's such a brilliant way of putting it.
Yeah, because it's the same as Kenny Powers. You sort of watch it and there's a lot of stuff that's not, and you know, it feels fucking, you know, very of now. And it's someone is just lost. And I think that's a really interesting thing to be able to convey. And I think that's the thing that when I watch,
that's something, would you say there's a bit of that in King Gary, isn't there? Like he's incredibly lovable, but he's also a dickhead. but you really, really, really love it.
Yeah, and all the people that I love that, And you know, probably like you, like, I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that was the stuff that I really took inspiration from as a stand-up and as a writer and program maker was always American. It was all stuff that, you know, they seemed to be able to do that and their characters seemed to be so better rounded, but actually to, because we have a real problem within society of people, you know, in some points, in some cases, yeah, people are just shit. But actually, in a lot of when you're writing normal characters and normal people, they're so conflicted by what is good and what is bad. We all are in 2023. Yeah. We're all trying to be as best person we can. But there's so much fucking noise going on. You're like, what do I follow? What do I, you know, it was far simpler as it says 10, 15 years ago, where actually you'd sort of almost be surrounded by people and you can cast your own opinions. There's so much noise now. And I think that actually making characters that feel off now, and that is just people trying to be the best they can, but quite a lot of the time failing in that. I think that's a really interesting, and I think Danny McBride and Jody Hill did that better than anyone. And to be fair, look, man, your fucking wife does, man. You get that so well. You've always got that. That's what I loved, you know. Superbob did that so well.
But you do
it so well, man. It's a difficult thing to do. Yeah, so that would be the thing that I relate to the most, I think.
Respect. Excellent, excellent answer. Here's the question that everyone is here for. What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Tom Davies?
I think it's a classic, and everyone's probably, but Basic Instinct would probably be there.
Yeah.
Is that the one that everyone...
No, but it is the one everyone should say, I'm sure.
Basic Instinct was, you know...
Seminal. Like,
I remember like pirate copies of it leaking about the school, and a boy called had the best copy, and he was like...
the least kind of
Not by the time I got it, it was very worn out. But that, you know, that feeling of like, it was like fucking Charlie Bucket with the last golden ticket. I remember the day that, you know, someone slips over to him and there's Basic Instinct turn out with you and like literally being like, okay, right. And it would be like someone gave me it and you think, right, I'll finish score at 3:20. I'll get the bus. Hopefully I'll get home by 4. My sister's going to someone's house to play. My mum doesn't get home till 5. Well, Dad, it's a lottery. It depends what, like, you know, what job he's on at the moment. Do you know what I mean? But you had one VHS recorder in the fucking front room and it's a real, like, I need to get home and then, yeah, and fast-forwarded through it. All right, fucking, I'll just get on with the scene. Not wanting to miss anything. Just hoping that someone gives you codes. It was, yeah. It was sort of...
Fast forwarding through. Yeah. Plot.
Okay. All right. I get it. She's not very nice. But actually, weirdly, the brunette woman's even worse. She seems to not. Yeah. even that's terrible. But fucking, like, yeah, 25, 30 years later, whatever, I still can't fucking tell you what the plot what happens in that movie. I don't think I've ever watched it.
Yeah, it's about this blonde woman, and
I think she's got a shop. Maybe I think she works at Macy's.
She's got a shop, and she sits down in the shop sometimes.
She's got the fella from Wall Street in. I think he's playing the same part. I think
he's doing some Wall Street stuff. She's got a shop.
And... I think she's engaged to Newman from Seinfeld.
Yeah, he seems pleased to see her a lot.
He sweats quite a lot, more than he did in Seinfeld, actually. But
he's more sweaty, like he's more sort of Jurassic Park Seinfeld guy. He's more that, he's doing that bit. Anyway, yeah, I think it's good.
He's a great sweater, actually. That's who I seem to be, actually. Weirdly, I'll go back and that's the person I relate to most in the show, in any film. Sweaty Newman.
The subcategory. Troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. A film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should.
You know the really weird one for me, and it's like, I remember sitting around at my auntie and uncle's and this was playing. So Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, right?
Mm.
You know the horrible king and his sort of missus? You know, like, they did a song of like, you're my little lollipop and you're my teddy bear. And he sort of chases her around. I remember that probably being the first time I had to sort of like slowly grab a pillow and put it over my lap. That was the
good answer. I like you 5 years before Basic Instinct on the bus home from school with Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I gotta get home there. Everyone's gonna be home at 5. You're my little lollipop. Let's go.
Just switching in the choices. Yeah, the lollipop song, the teddy bear lollipop song's really worn.
Joyce, I'm gonna need some wool. And Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, go. What's the wool for? Don't ask, Joyce. It's none of your fucking business.
No, just shut up, Joyce. Shut your bitch. I'm up against it here, mate. They're going to be finished. They'll be home from work at 5. that would be the... That's the one that...
Fantastic answer.
Yeah. It feels quite seedy in a way.
No, I love it. That's brilliant. Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva.
I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans, yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12. Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Well done. Tom Davis, what is objectively the greatest film ever made?
Do you know what I think it is? The Apartment with Jack Lemmon.
Oh, excellent, excellent answer.
I think that film started everything that me and you do now. I think that was the first sort of like rom-com-y sort of character. But I think it's got such a great, it's just, I rewatched it recently and it was that weird thing. And when I was starting to write scripts, my mum went out and she went, I've got you a present. And she'd been to Oxfam and she got like a Billy Wilder script book and it had like that and the fortune cookie written as scripts. So I'd sit and watch the films and go off the script. So I think it was like, for a lot of reasons, it became like this really, like strong. And I just think it's just, yeah, when you look at it and you can sort of see in its DNA, everything that, you know, Judd Apatow and the people that, you know, I think are incredible. Just genuinely that sort of screwball rom-com, it just has all of that. And like I say, the centre part of it, that sort of, relationship, like with between, you know, Sharon Payne and I think it's Fred Minotti, who like is the boss, and this guy just sort of, yeah, and some of the comedy set pieces, you know, the neighbor thinking constantly like he's having this party style lifestyle, yeah. he's literally walking there, you know, and when he gets, it's just brilliant, man. And there's a real time there that sort of we, you know, Joyce's Video Shop had that sort of film and that and things like Bringing Up Baby and there's something when we were writing King Gary, we were making film, and you go back and watch these things about, look, you know, I love swearing, it's whatever, but there's a great Cary Grant in that, and they're brilliant, those sort of those films of that time. I think you could learn so much as a writer just sitting watching those. And The Apartment, really, for me, is I think it set so much stuff.
Wonderful. Wonderful. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Probably, I'd say The Hangover. I think The Hangover, if it's ever on, me and Catherine will sit and it will just play on. We could be sitting down to watch another film, like, oh shit, we're going to watch like Barbie. And then you'll go to ITV2 and you go, oh fuck, Hangover's on. Well, just might as well watch 10 minutes. I love this bit. And then you know it, they're fucking looking at the photos at the end. I think it's a really weird thing. It's a bit like Friends in the sense of, when you first watch it, you're just completely obsessed with Zach Galifianakis. So you go, you know, he's just everything. And then you sort of like work, you know, Bradley Cooper comes, and then actually you just go, fucking Eddie Holmes is the star of this film. It's so fucking brilliant. And it's just a brilliant, I just think it's a perfect comedy movie. I think it's, and it just never fails to make me laugh. I think it has that level of ambition as a comedy piece. But yeah, I just think, yeah, that is just a wonderful bit of work.
Respect. Respect. What is, we don't like to be negative and you like this stuff, so like, what's the worst film you've ever seen?
It's quite easy for me, this one. The Liberace movie.
Really? Douglas. Under the candelabra?
Yeah. I went to watch it with Catherine. I think I was hungover, I think, probably, but okay. I went to watch it with Catherine and we both fell asleep 10 minutes in. And I at the end went, oh, that movie was shit. And this woman in front of me turned around and she went, I'm surprised, you know, you were snoring through most of it. And so not only did I ruined it for everyone else in the cinema. And then I was like, maybe we were too harsh in it. We tried to give it another watch. And I'm a positive guy. I just found it, I just couldn't get on board with it. And it's hard as well, because the thing about it, right, is, and you know, in this industry, I find it really difficult to be, as you know, I've grown into it, I find it really, really hard to be negative about stuff, because I know that people have put time and effort into things.
Yeah.
And to write a script is difficult, or to, that one I just found, and it really, I could see that it just didn't resonate with me. I found it a really difficult watch. And I feel bad saying this now, but I had to say something. You've pushed me into a corner. And everyone in it is financially
you forced this
well
on
enough
me.
Of. Yeah, it is
forced this on me.
I could have said there's two other things I was thinking of, which I won't say. And I know that everyone else is still nicking a living. They're still just about fucking head above water. What I know is Michael Douglas doesn't need Tom Davis to review his films and go, you know, he's done all right.
And you listen, you know, you've been very positive on Basic Instinct. Sure, you
yes, yeah. Know what no, actually, to be fair, this was a real... Michael Douglas, he's like, what? He didn't even watch Basic Instinct. Didn't even enjoy your sex scenes.
Too busy watching Sweaty Newman. What is the film that made you... You're funny. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I think sort of Uncle Buck and... I think anything with John Candy was like... John Candy... I think Trains, Planes. I think Trains, Planes is moments, small moments. Like, I watch and I think he was just the absolute... He was a godfather of it all. Like, everything that... Like, if there's any one person, you know, Danny McBride, I think, for certain sides, but that... sign of like to be sort of vulnerable but still so massive and sort of have this sort of like, you know, and Trains, Planes, there's just amazing little one-liners that he has. There's a moment with Steve Martin when they're driving to the first hotel and they've just left the airport and they're in that cab with this sort of like quiet sort of like aggressive looking dude, and Steve Martin just turns around and it's like, Fudge said this was like 10 minutes down the road, and John Candy's like, he's giving us a guided tour. It's, you know, he's like, your friend said you're not from Manor. He's like, he's proud of his town. It's a rare thing this day. And I don't know why that's such a... I laugh every time that moment comes on because it's such really a small lovely. Thing that's so real. And it's just performance across the film. And I just think he, he's just like the perfect performer. I think it was the improviser and, you know, Uncle Buck. They're films that I'll just sit and I'll watch, Cool Runnings. I just think he managed to just... Yeah. Take the art of being funny, but actually just package it and it's completely believable. And to be a big guy and not to ever rely on your size as being a sort of like aggressive side of things.
That, yeah, I found that that's really, so really interesting. Inspiring. I never thought about that. The joke is never that he's
big. He's always vulnerable. And I think that's, I think, yeah, anything with John Candy makes me laugh, but often quite a lot of the time will make me cry as well. I think the end of Trains, Planes, arguably that moment is just, I'm done. And the speech, man, I like me, my wife likes me. You're like, wow, a little bit of your fucking, you know, it's there, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Weirdly, the last person I recorded this podcast with also picked John Candy. We talked about him a lot, and he is like pure. You want to talk about fucking likability, like,
yeah,
you love him. You just love him in everything.
Yeah.
He's like, instantly, you fucking love him.
Because it's interesting as to how, like, you know, Danny McBride and say, Will Ferrell have, like, massive impacts on me as a comedian and stuff that I think is amazing to tell. But they're both, and, you know, in the character, they're probably more inspiring in some ways, but actually when I watch Candy, it's an art of his characters and never that thing. They're always... Like, let's, and it's probably a time, time has changed and time's progressed. And, you know, we're not having to make sort of our protagonist always likable to sort of sell a thing, but he managed to do that. And actually, but then, and just you rooted for him in every scenario. It's like, you know, I sit watching Uncle Buck and still that the bit when he's in with the teacher, one of the greatest scenes because, you know, he still manages to be the underdog in all those situations.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really, I think he's up there for as one of the greatest. Ever perform, I think, you know. And man, let's not even get started on JFK because my guy fucking goes in there. JFK, he's incredible.
Yeah, he does. I forget that.
He's incredible.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals? Marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas? Ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor, Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Now, Tom Davis.
Yes, sir.
You have been magnificent, as expected. However, 10 years in the future, when for some awfully tragic reason, you're suddenly very frail, and you and I are going to do Always Be Comedy with James Gill, and you're like hobbling up the steps, and I'm having to help you, and you say, do you remember I said, and suddenly you've got an accent, do you remember I said, do you remember I said, if I'm ever too frail, you take care of me? And I say, yeah, I do, Tom. It's so tragic. It's happened so quickly. And I say, you go ahead. You go ahead. Don't, that's it. Go ahead. Like in Goodfellas when Robert De Niro's like, just go there. Keep going.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Keep going there. Just keep going there.
What a cool
And you're walking up the stairs and you're like, really? And I go, keep going. Yeah, yeah. Just up ahead. And you're like, to be fair, it's not actually that many steps. At the Tommy Field.
And also probably but you're slow. Fiddling around with the gun.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to just put a silencer on it. But annoyingly, with the putting the silencer on, it's quite noisy, ironically. Yeah. And but you're frail and you're like, and I keep going, just James is up there. James is up there. I go,
keep going.
And you're like, are you sure? And I go, yeah.
And then me really annoyed, turning around going, it's weird, isn't it? Because he's never done stand-up on Tuesdays.
And James is going, are you ready? And I'm going, James, just go in there. And go ahead. Anyway, and then I shoot you in the leg, in the back, dead.
And then you look at my face, I'm smiling, right?
Yeah.
Because I know what's coming.
Yeah, you look happy. You weren't. Yeah. You played along. You're a wonderful actor. You played along, but you knew what was happening. And I've got a coffin with me. You know what I'm like? In the other hand. And I go, oh, there he is. And then James comes out and he goes, what are you doing? And I go, James, I've just shot Tom three times. As requested, and James goes, well, we've got a show. I go, I know, listen, I can go longer, it'll be fine. I say, help me out here. And he goes, well, what are we going to do? I go, we've got to get him in the coffin, but we're going to have to do it in chunks. And so he goes, well, quick, and he gets Tim, and he says, Tim, you got one of your axes?
Speak Tim Lewis.
Tim goes, shout out Tim Lewis. Tim Lewis comes out with an axe. He goes, yeah, what do you need? I said, well, I just need to chop up Tom Davis here. And I go, oh, God, we're like 3 minutes till the show. I go, yeah, it'll be fine. So we just start chopping up your body on the stairs. Bits going everywhere. We pack you in the coffin. I'll be honest, there was more of you than I was expecting. That coffin is absolutely rammed. It is packed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What with your walking stick and your walker and all the accoutrements you
have. It's like a greedy person at a pick-a-mix.
It's everywhere. Right, there's no room in this coffin. There's really only enough room for me to slide one DVD in the side for you to take across to the other side. And when you get there, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the sausage party in heaven when it is your movie night, Mr. Tom Davis?
You know what? I think it would have to be The Hangover. I think it has enough. I think it has enough in it. I think I can watch that most nights, and I'll take something new from it. I think there's so many different things, but I think, you know what? That would be the one.
Okay.
There'd be an incredible moment when Bradley Cooper walks past and he's like, oh my God. And I'm like, this is it, mate. It's the only film that I've got to watch. He's like, nobody else has picked this movie. I was like, actually, weirdly, mate, if you want a story, when I went to see The Star Is Born, I had my first gay kiss.
He sits down next to you and he goes, fucking hell, boy.
And that's when the end music plays out, like Lord of the Rings. It's a double ending.
Tom Davies, what a delight. Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, to watch for? I suggest they go see you on tour for starters.
I'd say the tour, which will be a lot of fun, which is going to be all around the UK from February next year or whenever this goes out. And also Wonka is out.
Oh, yeah, you fucking Wonka.
And it's the 15th of December, which is, I've not seen it yet, so hopefully I've made the cut. I hope so. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, fingers crossed. So that comes out on the 15th of December, so that'll be a lot of fun. So go and watch. If nothing else, just see Timothy Chalamet, be amazing.
Okay. Tom Davies.
Brett Goldstein.
I love you.
Bless you, brother. It's been a joy.
Thank you for doing
this. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking me on this journey, bro.
Yeah, we've really been places. I'd say in many ways, it's been an incredible journey. Lots of love. Thank you. Have a good night. Good day. Brother.
Thank you.
So that was episode 274. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra secret videos and extra questions with Tom. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read and my neighbour Maureen loves it and always cries. Thank you so much to Tom for giving me his time and for being so brilliant. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. So that is it for now. I'll be back next week with another excellent guest that you will love. But in the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen. Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.